Court, counsel. My name is Barbara Kleinite, and I represent Roland Turner, who's the plaintiff in this case, because he was injured at Statesville Correctional Center when his hand contacted live electrical wires in the showers. We went to trial. The verdict form in this case provided for a three-step analysis for the jury. The first step was to determine whether or not the defendants were negligent. The second step was to determine whether or not the plaintiff was negligent. And the third step was to determine whether or not there was a violation of civil rights in the sense of unconstitutional living conditions. We took this appeal because we do believe that the evidence so overwhelmingly showed that they were negligent and that they violated my client's civil rights that we feel we're entitled to judgment as a matter of law on both counts. The thing that we want to point out most in closing argument, oral argument, is that the defense really comes up with no argument against the evidence that they were negligent or against the evidence that they were violating the plaintiff's rights, except that the plaintiff, they theorize, caused his own injury by standing on some buckets and trying to dismantle a light fixture. I did want to point out that according to the verdict form, the jury did not reach that issue. They found on the first step not guilty on negligence against the defendants, but they made no finding that the plaintiff was contributorily negligent, and therefore we submit that this verdict was based only on a finding that the defendants were not negligent, and that is so contrary to the evidence that we believe it cannot stand.
Contrary to what evidence? To the prisoner's testimony?
In part, Your Honor, yes.
The jury didn't have to believe the prisoners.
They don't have to if they're not credible, but these particular inmates were presented. First of all, there were four inmates who testified that the condition of the exposed wires.
There was. Could have been 1,000 who testified to that. Well, why would the jury have to believe them? They're not a very credible body of people. They love to testify for each other.
I guess
no sanctions for their false testimony, so.
I guess it depends upon the circumstances. In this case, there were four separate inmate witnesses in addition to the plaintiff.
So what? I mean, it could be 100 separate ones. Why would the jury have to believe? I mean, it is well known that these prisoners are constantly trying to make weapons out of anything they can find. So, I don't understand. It seems to me, once the jury found the defendants weren't even negligent, it just destroys your whole case.
If the jury's finding that they were not negligent can stand, but we have here evidence that this condition existed for over a year before the incident and no evidence that it was created on the day of the accident. In order to reject the idea that the condition did not pre-exist, the jury would have had to have found that somehow somebody dismantled that light fixture on the day of the accident, and yet the officers testified the bulb was missing, the cover was missing, the fixture was put together with masonry bolts for the express purpose of preventing inmates from dismantling them. The plaintiff had no tool. He would have had to use his bare hands to take apart these thick masonry bolts, and nobody saw any light bulb, any light fixture, any tool, nothing in the showers that day. So there is no evidence that that light fixture was dismantled on the day of the occurrence. Therefore, that supports the credibility of four inmates who testified from four different locations, had no opportunity to compare their stories, had no particular motivation to fabricate the testimony. We had video testimony from three of the inmates from three different correctional centers. They had no opportunity to talk to each other, and one live witness who was brought into court and had no opportunity to compare his testimony with the other witnesses. We also would point out that a lot of our evidence was based on the defendant's own testimony.
There were other factors put before the jury, like the buckets that were everywhere and the fact that that he didn't have a head injury and the fact that he was revived fairly quickly with ammonia, which was contrary to being electrocuted in some way. I mean, that was other evidence that the jury had to consider. True?
I don't remember evidence anyone testifying that it indicated he was not electrocuted. I think the defense conceded he was shot and basically said our position is that it was him dismantling the light fixture. But I think they admitted he was shocked, and
right.
The doctor...
Right, I mean the extent of it. The extent of it. There was some question about the extent of it.
Yes, obviously, he didn't get electrocuted.
Right.
He was just shocked, and the main injury was the fall. I think in this case, the med tech's testimony was the best. He testified that the signs that Mr. Turner showed were consistent with electric shock. And I would like to save a minute for rebuttal, if I may.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Welsh.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Mary Welsh here on behalf of the defendants, Miller, Morgan, and and Nickerson. Yes, as the Court has indicated, this is really just a credibility contest, which the jury resolved in favor of the defendants. And because of that, and because of the standard of review, unless there's something either fundamentally wrong or against the manifest weight of the evidence, the jury's verdict has to stand. And here there was evidence that none of the defendants had seen the wires hanging down, even though one of the defendants, Lieutenant Miller, had been...
Well, we'll wait just a moment. We're going to inquire from the marshals whether there's anything they know about this.
I don't hear anything.
Would you like me to continue while we're waiting?
I wanted to wait a sec. Okay. We're not debiting your time.
I assumed that. I was already cut back, so I assumed that I wouldn't
sit down.
Hey, you can sit down if you like.
It's a good sign. Isn't it a little different? I don't know. There's instructions to walk down 6 floors and leave the building.
Isn't that goofy? Walk down 6 floors and leave the building, jump out of the window. Okay.
To reiterate, this was a credibility contest. There was evidence before the jury which, if believed, could have led them and did in fact lead the jury to decide that the defendants were not negligent, and that's obviously not guilty of violating the plaintiff's Eighth Amendment rights. But more importantly, I think the question, the threshold question here is jurisdiction, and that is whether the plaintiff's negligence claim in fact belonged in the Court of Claims of Illinois rather than in federal court or even the Circuit Court of Illinois. Under the Court of Claims Act, as you know, this court certainly knows, all torts against the state have to be brought in the Court of Claims. And because this is a state law question, this court must follow what the Illinois Supreme Court either has said or would reasonably say. And the Supreme Court has spoken on this issue, almost identical issue, in Healy. And in Healy, the court said that when you have a state employee who is performing a function as a state employee, that that state employee has sovereign immunity and the claim has to be brought in the Court of Claims. Now, in Healy, interestingly, the complaint or the claims, the tort claims there, were virtually identical to the tort claims here, a failure to warn of a dangerous condition, a failure to protect. And this was involving a student who was injured in gymnastics at the gym at the university. And the court said this is exactly the kind of claim that goes to the Court of Claims.
What case was that?
Healy versus Bhopal, yes. And this case was distinguished by the Illinois Supreme Court later in Curry versus Lau. And Curry, that was a case in which a state officer had a car accident, and he was not involved in uniquely state functions.
How is this uniquely a state function, maintaining fixtures in showers?
Well, somebody at a public university and coaching someone at a private university. And what the Illinois Supreme Court said was, this is different. The only reason that this particular defendant owes a duty to this plaintiff is that the defendant is a state employee. If there were not the government employment, there would be no duty. And similarly here, if there were not government employment, only after all, I mean, even more than a university, only the state is what runs prisons. And so prisons are uniquely government functions, and that's why the maintenance of a prison and a defendant's duty under tort duty would be the kind of duty that has to be litigated in the Court of Claims. This court recognized this proposition. There was an accident in a university laboratory, and this court recognized that an accident in a university gymnasium, as in Healy, was no different from the accident in the university lab. This is different from, say, a car crash, as in Curry, where there's a statutory duty on the part of every single driver to be driving, you know, making a proper lookout and so on. It's different from the attorneys in Johnson, the public defenders who were found that their malpractice claims against them did not have to be brought in the Court of Claims because attorneys owe a duty outside of employment, just as there's a duty that every attorney owes a client to not commit malpractice. And the only other exception that the Illinois courts have found are for healthcare professionals, which have the Hippocratic Oath and so on. So they have also, again, a duty outside of state employment. Whereas this case falls within, and there are two, the Illinois Supreme Court has essentially divided state employees into two groups, one of which is a group who's performing the duties that everybody performs, like driving, that's Curry, and another group, the group that's in Healy, where they're performing, where there would be no duty, no relationship were it not for state employment. And that's the group that this case falls into. And if the court did have any doubt, of course, it could certify the question to the Illinois court. Because there was enough evidence here, even if there were jurisdiction, for the jury to believe that Mr. Miller, Lieutenant Morgan, or Sergeant Nickerson violated any duty that he might have had to the plaintiff. There was no duty, for example, on Miller to inspect. He only processed work orders. He was the assistant.
May I have your attention?
Or did not have a duty to inspect. Lieutenant Morgan, in fact, his testimony was that he did inspect the showers himself 95% of the time. So, and he did not see anything. He testified he did not see these wires hanging down until after the incident. Similarly, Sergeant Nickerson said he was there. He didn't inspect it with the same regularity that Lieutenant Morgan did, but he was there every two or three weeks, and he did not see these. No defendant said that he had heard any complaints from any of the defendants, from the plaintiff. And interestingly, the plaintiff himself testified that he did, in fact, send a grievance about the sanitation conditions, but somehow never included in his grievance this particular problem. And the jury may have decided that it wasn't believable that someone who would complain about sanitary conditions would not have also complained about a hanging wire. There were also no prior, the med techs testified that there were no prior shocks, and if this had been hanging down up to 2 feet, as one of the inmates testified, then it would stand to reason, and 2 feet for 3 years, it would stand to reason that this sort of incident would have occurred before, and yet the med tech said this had never occurred. Also, as to the cause of the incident, plaintiff has one version. Mr. DeLalva, another inmate, was in front of him. They were sharing a shower head. The plaintiff stepped back, put his hand up, brushed the wires, and fell. Mr. DeLalva, however, testified that no, he was at another shower head. So this certainly could lead the jury to believe that the plaintiff's testimony was simply not credible. In addition, I have to say, I can't remember which judge pointed out. It was not uncommon for the inmates to vandalize the fixtures. There was testimony to this effect, and that they could do it without tools. So the fact that there were no tools found, then that it does not necessarily prove, certainly doesn't prove indubitably, that there could not have been, that the plaintiff could not have been trying to vandalize the fixture.
The claim here was in two parts, the Eighth Amendment claim plus then the supplemental negligence?
Correct, Your Honor. And so certainly, and the jury was instructed, as counsel said, the jury was instructed that if you find for the defendants on the negligence count, then you don't even reach the Eighth Amendment count, because of course not even gross negligence, you know, would be an Eighth Amendment violation. But lastly, with regard to the injury itself, as I think it was Judge William pointed out, there was evidence that none of the inmates were concerned about this. When there was evidence that inmates are always concerned about injury to other inmates, there was also evidence that the plaintiff was not groggy when the med tech came in and tried to revive him with the ammonia. And there was no objective evidence. There was no bruising. There were no lacerations, and there was no swelling. So all of this evidence that was contrary to plaintiff's claim was enough for the jury to believe that the defendants were not negligent, or that the plaintiff's injury was not, whatever it was not a result of the defendant's conduct. So if there are no further questions, obviously if there was insufficient problems with either the jury instruction or the impeachment, which by the way was already in a substantive evidence, and also with the jury instructions, if if there was nothing fundamentally wrong with any of these three things, obviously there was no reason to have a new trial. And if there's no reason to have a new trial, there's certainly no reason to reverse the verdict. So we ask this court to affirm the verdict in the favor, either on jurisdictional grounds, because the claim belonged in the Court of Claims, or on the merits. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Welsh. Ms. Clement, how much time does she have? 3 minutes?
Counsel makes much of the credibility issue in this case, which...
Before you get to that, do you have any comment on the Healy case on which she places her particular reliance?
Illinois courts, I think it's important to distinguish school cases versus other cases because the Illinois...
Okay, sorry about that.
The Illinois statute, which is cited in our brief, which sets out the Court of Claims jurisdiction, states that all actions against the state shall be brought in the Court of Claims, and then lists specific institutions which are also included, and the majority of those are universities, University of Illinois and other universities in Illinois. So when you're talking about a school liability case, that portion of the statute comes into play, whereas it does not list correctional centers as institutions which fall under the Act. So our position is that those cases that the defense relies on are not on point because they rely upon the statute, which specifically makes them under the Court of Claims jurisdiction. The general Court of Claims jurisdiction, when an institution is not specified, is limited to actions against the state. And then you come to the question whether the duty that is involved is unique to the government employment or whether it is not.
This was argued in the district court as well?
Yes, it was. And I wanted to mention, counsel said that it was common for them to take apart light fixtures. They could do it with their bare hands and so forth. I think one of the key pieces of evidence was the absence of any work order, which Mr. Gunville, the chief engineer, testified. He'd never seen a work order for the light fixtures in E-House, which means they had never had occasion to and actually repaired them. Now, either inmates were not taking the fixtures apart, and so there was no need for repairs, or they took them apart and they didn't fix it. And so we submit that the evidence is consistent with they took it apart and it was never repaired. If not, then there was not a custom of inmates taking apart light fixtures in the showers, and the defense is wrong. I don't think they can use the evidence both ways. If they didn't get a work order...
Did you argue that to the jury?
Yes, Your Honor, we did.
Why weren't they persuaded?
I think one of the reasons is that my client was, his credibility was damaged by the improper impeachment effort. I think the other reason is that there was this theory that was mentioned at the end of the argument about the plaintiff standing on buckets, and there were a lot of other things that the defense argued in there that weren't based on the evidence, and I think they were confused. But I think what it came down to is that there was prejudice or passion on the part of the jury. Perhaps they just didn't like my client. But when I look at this evidence, especially on the negligence count, they admitted they had a duty to provide a reasonably safe shower. They never repaired the light fixture in the shower. The evidence was that it was that way before. There's no evidence it was created that day. And there's no dispute that the individual plaintiff actually reached up, touched the wires, and fell and was shot. I do not believe this verdict is consistent with the evidence. I think it's so contrary to the evidence that at least on the negligence count, there should be a reversal with a new trial, if not judgment as a matter of law. Either they went out and they inspected the showers and they saw the light fixture apart and said, "We don't care." Or they went out and inspected the showers and didn't bother to look at the light fixtures, which was negligence. And if there are no other questions, I think those are the points I wanted to make.
Okay, thank you very much to both counsel. Sorry about all those interruptions from the